This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
Hey, what's going on? Ryan back again. Thanks, as always, for checking out the podcast here. Today, we will talk to one of my favorite people that's doing sound design tools these days. His name is Joe DeAugustine, and I double-checked when I interviewed him. Yes, I believe I did say that correctly. Pretty confident I've screwed his name up every time I've said it, probably to his face as well. Anyway, thank him for making the time. Pretty good interview, I have to say. It's two shorter parts, so that's nice. We will hear some of his audio. His main product is SoundFreaks, soundfreaks.com. You'll hear more about that, but this is the main demo for that to kick things off. I'll play some of his actual radio imaging production at the end of part one. Part two, I'll kick it off with the demo to his latest product, which is called Identify, something I've been using a lot lately. I really like it. And then I'm going to play something kind of cool at the end of part two. It's a demo from a different product he offers focused on the 80s. It's his 80s imaging kit. Anyway, you'll hear more about that at the end of part two. I will say, just ironically, Joe brings up a very well-known name in the world of radio imaging. Most people listening to this probably have at least heard of him, if not know his work really well. Rick Allen, he'll be the next guest on The Producers. I'm really excited to finally talk to him. It's a guy I actually tried to reach out to a long time ago, and evidently I may have had an incorrect email, and so I decided to give it another whirl. One of the nicer guys I've ever had the pleasure of exchanging emails with. So we'll see how he really is in person. But Rick will be the next guest. So I'll tell you now, if you'd like to submit questions for him, you can do that. Contact form on the website. You can email me. I'll tell you more about that info at the end of the podcast as well. But for right now, I say we dive right in. Joe DeAugustine.
In the interest of less is more, brevity is the wit of soul. Or any other garden variety cliche being passed off as brilliant programming philosophy. We will not take longer than 90 seconds of your time. Further, we will not torture you with self-indulgent adverbs and adjectives, but rather let you decide what to think. Timer starts now.
Attention! Sound freaks. Sound freaks. Imaging library for broadcast. Sound freaks. Versatile and complete. Breakers. Impacts. Communication effects. Loops. And more.
The sounds are blended together to achieve a new dimension of sound.
Sound freaks. The following are examples of important industry people who are quite fond of sound freaks. As such, they kindly provided us with production examples for your listening pleasure.
Would you like to hear a sample?
Yes!
Let's hear it!
Here we go!
Where hit music lives. Z100.
New York's hit music station.
KBE, Seattle, Tacoma.
What it is, man? It's your homeboy T-Pain.
Let's listen to the music.
Check out this week's feature music on Cube 93. The hits starts here. Hey, on Cube 93. Holla at your boy.
The iTunes download. Hits of the world. Number one.
Where are we?
iTunes download.
Hey.
More heat.
More heat.
Yeah, check it out.
Right here.
Power 106.
Kiss FM.
This is Kiss.
Sound freaks.
Sound freaks.
Hey, this is Steve Piger of Puretonic Media and co-creator of Production Vault. Because of the nature of our services, we need a constant supply of great sounding effects. Sound Freaks actually does everything that other packages just say they do. They make a real difference.
It's sound, and it's done by freaks. Therefore, we call it Sound Freaks. Duh. Skip buying your child a Wii and do the right thing. Sound Freaks, available now.
And there it is. We kick it off with the Sound Freaks demo with our guest today, Joe DeAugustine. Did I say your name right?
You said it correctly. Yes, it's great. It's great to
awesome.
Hear it.
I appreciate your time. I've been a rather large fan of your work now for a little while. I've put it into use in multiple formats, you know, multiple stations in multiple formats. And we'll get into everything that you do in a bit, but I'll just first say thanks for giving me the time, and I appreciate you being here.
No, thank you. I'm actually really honored to be on here, and that you find me interesting enough to have on your show, so...
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm not sure how exciting I'm going to be, so you have this recorded, and I'm, you know, saying that if it right. sucks, you don't have to run it, and just say that I flaked out on you.
Okay, excellent. No, I guarantee that won't happen, but I will say it's cool to have actually met the guest, because in this world, you know, I talk to people all over the world, and a lot of times I've barely even spoken to the guest, but we got to meet in LA. So where exactly are you right now? Are you in the home studio or?
Yes, in the home studio in Pasadena.
Excellent.
Yep, right up the freeway from where we met at the summit earlier.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool event, the All Access Worldwide Radio Summit, nice little awards deal. Well, cool. Just so anybody wants to dive into your stuff as we talk, soundfreaks.com is the main website I'll send people to where they can start rooting around your stuff, sound, soundfreqz.com, and they can start checking you out and getting your background all worked out. But let's dive in. Basically, why did you start doing either radio imaging, being in radio, period, or this sound design stuff? What got you started?
Just being into music and sound, and I moved out here to go to engineering school. It was called the Audio and Video Institute of Hollywood, I believe, and I wanted to do music, be the music producer, engineer, and I ended up getting an internship through the school for ABC Watermark, who was doing like American Top 40 with Shadow Stevens and American Country Countdown with Bob Kingsley. And the more I hung out there, the more I got sucked into the radio world. They basically mm-hmm. couldn't get rid of me. You know, I would, you know, coming from the Midwest, I was originally from Chicago, being out there, I would go and intern like 40 hours plus a week. So I think I kind of forced them into hiring me because I was just hanging out all the time.
Yeah, you're one of those guys in radio. I think there's a few of those stories, quite a few.
Yeah.
So did you then get a job at an actual radio station, or did you stay on sort of the network side of things? Or?
Yeah, that's what's funny. I have never worked at a radio station, and everyone's like, what? What are you doing here? But yeah, I was working for ABC Watermark, like I said, you know, working on the shows, hanging out, just absorbing everything. They finally started giving me little gigs of editing voice tracks, doing dubs, pre-mastering for their CD replication, artist interviews, stuff like that. And then eventually that evolved into mixing and assembling the top 40 shows. Just kind of covered for one of the main engineers. They threw me in the fire one week and said, okay, you're going to put together this 4-hour show. And after shitting my pants, I said, okay, no problem. Cool. So, I started doing it. It took me like 27 hours straight, but, I did do it. And then that just evolved into eventually regularly mixing and putting segments together while the main engineer was going to the bathroom eating and stuff. And I kind of, that's kind of how I got into the whole radio thing.
And how, let's see here. So you basically went out to the LA area for school and you've been there ever since. Did you ever take time and go away from there and come back?
No, I've been here ever since. Yeah. Stuck here.
How long have you been out there about?
Almost 21 years now.
Okay. So did you ever get into the whole, you know, music production side of things where you're either producing a band or working in a studio like that?
A little bit. I actually toyed around and was actually in a band for a while and got involved with the production of the demos and stuff like that, but it was just kind of a weird hobby type thing. But I never, you know, I did a couple little projects, little demos for friends, bands and stuff like that, but nothing too exciting.
It seems like more often than not, when I talk to some of the better, more talented and or creative sound design producers, you find that they have a pretty solid musical background. Have you found that to be pretty necessary to your work?
Definitely helps. I'm not like a great musician by any stretch of the imagination. I'm, I think, very musically inclined. You know, I just kind of dabble around with a lot of stuff and, you know, just have a great appreciation for it and just been kind of a music freak all my life. So I think just from listening to so much music and everything, I've kind of naturally absorbed a lot of, you know, good qualities, I don't know, towards music, I guess. Being able to pull some stuff off.
Yeah. I think that shines through in some of your work. I know your latest package is the Identify package. That is the latest one, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think if people get it, either go check out the free sounds that you have on the site, check out the demo, or actually get the package, you'll hear it's rather musical at times. Which I know, I think a lot of producers like that. You know, you don't want your effects, your beds, and your materials to sound too stale or generic or, you know, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but non-musical.
Right. Yeah, there's some pretty good rhythmic stuff in there. And I did, you know, team up with Mike Young and collaborated on this with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of that stuff was him, too. He did a lot of rhythmic stuff. He's got a hip-hop DJing background. Did a lot of mixtape stuff, still does. And I think that, you know, translated well into a lot of the elements that are in this new library.
Yeah, Mike Young is a talented guy. While this interview will be mostly about you, let's talk about him real quick. How did you get hooked up with him? You know, what's your guys' business relationship? And, you know, what all have you guys done together?
It's kind of strange, funny, cool, weird. We met on the internet. I was just a fan of his work, had heard some things that he had done and exchanged some emails with him. And I was starting to work on the new Sound Freaks, what I thought was going to be Sound Freaks 2. And I kind of wanted to bring him into the picture and do something a little different, a little bigger, and just kind of put a little different twist on it. And that evolved into the Identify library. And yeah, he was interested. We just kind of seemed to gel with the same ideas, and we started trading files back and forth, and they just kind of had good continuity, and they just we just worked pretty well together, even though we've never met face to face. So
yeah, one of those deals. Okay.
yeah kind of weird.
Yeah, we'll get more into your work, what you do with him and that in a bit, but just to go back a little bit, talk about training or, you know, any technical education you got, you know, back in the day. Were you self-taught? Did you take courses? Did you have kind of a mentor? How'd you get some of the skills you have?
Well, like I said, I went to the engineering school out here, and that kind of gave me a good foundation. And then it was basically, a lot of it started developing when I was interning at ABC and just kind of watching how the shows were put together and the pacing of, you know, the voice with the elements and stuff like that. And just hanging out, watching the other engineers. One of the other engineers, his name was Ken Helford at the time, actually took the time to help me learn some digital stuff on the NED system. Which was weird at the point. At that point, it was, you know, New England Digital was like a synclave, and that's what the American Top 40 shows were being produced on. So, kind of learned on that through him and working there. But after that, it was just other things were coming in to the studio, and somebody would say, "Oh man, you know, can you whip up an intro for this show or the special feature," and things like that. And I just started kind of playing around with elements and some of the libraries that they had for the shows and experimenting with them.
Do you remember any of the early libraries that you might have used that were sort of your spark to get you going and wanting to create your own?
They were, I think, kind of the package deals that they had made specifically for the shows. So they had like some impacts and wipes and whooshes and stuff like that. So I just kind of started playing around with those and just getting the feel how they work and how they were kind of put together. And then I would just kind of start emulating them. And I would go in on weekends and start playing around with like keyboards and samplers that were there, reversing cymbals, stuff like that. And just kind of really just experimenting all the time until till I started actually coming up with something that sounded halfway decent here and there.
And at a certain point, you were also you started at least branding actual radio stations. You are currently, and at some point you started imaging radio stations.
Yeah, a lot of startup packages for stations who are new, you know, just getting their radio licenses and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'll do stuff for them, just kind of get them up and running, see what kind of things work for them, what doesn't work for them, and then kind of going back and fine-tuning the things and just doing little packages for them, kind of one-offs here and there.
Was that while you were a part of the ABC network, or what was it called then?
ABC Watermark. That was shortly after, because they moved to Texas, the radio networks, and
they became a part of my radio family.
Ah, okay. Small world.
That was a while.
It's always,
anyway.
Always a small world in radio land, right?
But
it was, they canceled American Top 40 with Shadow, and Radio Express, a big company that sells syndicated programs and that, kind of had a replacement show in mind called the World Chart Show. And that just kind of transitioned. So I stayed in LA and started working on the World Chart Show. And just from being there at the beginning, they would need, you know, little special feature production pieces, intros, things like that. So I just kind of started doing more and more specialty things like that, and started messing around with just different types of elements and coming up with fun, weird stuff for the show.
Mm-hmm. And so at what point, I mean, I'm assuming you're not, I mean, you're pretty much on your own at this point, right?
Yes. Yep. Totally alone here, isolated in my padded room.
At what point did you decide it was a good time to do that? And was that right about the time you released Sound Freaks, or was there something else before that?
There was, during all this time, I was working on an imaging library, because from doing all these promos and everything like that I just mentioned, all these special features, I started getting a lot better. I started paying more attention to imaging on the radio and what was going on. And I was listening to K-Rock a lot out here, and I was just a huge fan of John Frost. I just like, mm-hmm. this stuff is amazing. It's like this whole new world that I didn't even really knew existed when I went to this engineering school. You know what I mean? And it was a creative, different area that just really appealed to me. So again, I just started messing around on weekends, like I said, with a bunch of weird little plugins that were out at that time.
When did you release Sound Freaks?
At least, I want to say like probably 5 years ago, maybe. And that was, I was kind of collecting my own sounds at that point while I was doing all this other stuff for other libraries. I was a content provider for a couple other libraries at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I did release another library, but it was a online library, and I don't think I know we didn't have the right marketing budget for advertising or anything, so we ended up selling it, me and this other guy, and I just started making some cold calls to some other imaging places, and that's when I hooked up with Rick Allen.
Yeah.
And I did some stuff for him for like 3 years, doing sound design for Climax and some of his other services. And he was just a great guy, really cool, down-to-earth guy. So that was cool, fun opportunity. That's when I really just started doing mass amounts of sound design.
For those that are, I have a lot of people that are just interested in creating their own sounds, and we'll get into more technical stuff in a minute, but there's also people interested in the business side of things. What are, what's either the one main thing or a couple main things that you learned from, as you said, the first one you tried to release online, didn't really have the right marketing, and then with Sound Freaks, you obviously have done it better. You know, what are some things people might not think about, either mistakes you made or just things people may not know about this industry and how you release a library with success?
Okay. It was really, really hard to sell on your own. You know, I mean, there's so much competition out here, and just to put out a library and think people are going to find it and go, whoa, this mm-hmm. is great. You know, it just doesn't happen that way. So And through my connections and that people that I worked with, I thought, oh, this will be great. I have a little foundation here and it'll be slow, but it should take off. But it's a little harder than that. And I definitely would have saved up a little more money for advertising and marketing and try to make a bigger splash, you know.
What types of advertising and marketing did you find actually work? You know, after you sort of, you tried the first time and didn't have it right, then you obviously did some stuff that got it out there properly. You know, was it just simple Google ads, or what kind of stuff did you do that worked?
I found that Radio Express was interested in repping me internationally for Sound Freaks, because I've had a relationship with them over the years, working on a lot of the shows and doing a lot of imaging for their shows and stuff. So when they heard it, they're like, yeah, cool, let's take this and start selling it. So that's been a big, huge help for me.
Internationally, they don't have much of they don't do as much in the States for you?
No U.S. So I'm still doing U.S. by myself, which is really hard. I'm currently looking for a rep here in the U.S. So
it sounds like, I mean, it's all fine and dandy if you're super talented and you create an amazing package, but in this day and age, you really do need to be repped by a company that knows what they're doing.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it would be your contention that it's just a little too difficult to do it on your own.
Yeah, definitely. You know.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. I mean, it sucks the creativity right out of you. Mm-hmm.
It seems like the guys that can really focus on the creative side of things and they have someone doing the business for them seem to just, like you said, they don't have the creativity sucked out of them as much. They can focus so much energy on the creativity, thus creating a pretty darn good package.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Before I get into the technical aspects of your work, identifies the most recent package that I got my hands on. As I said, I've used it a lot. I love it. But you did something a little different. You sort of launched it, and I believe you did this with Radio Express. You did a contest based around it. Tell me how that worked.
Yeah. It was a cool little idea of just trying to get a bunch of producers involved and just seeing how creative they could get with the 10 tracks we provided for them free on the Radio Express website. We just wanted to see who could take these, you know, this limitation of these 10 identified tracks and see how they could put them to use. You know, usability was a factor, and creativity, and just how cool they could make something with these tracks. So a bunch of entries, it was pretty cool, came in, and the winner received $1,000.
Is there anywhere that people can actually hear the entries or the winner, or is that posted? Or
yeah, it's posted on the Radio Express site. I don't have the link right here with me.
I'll put a link on the show notes page of this episode.
Okay.
So people can go check that out. I like the concept of that. So did that help out getting the word out about the product?
I think so. I mean, $1,000 is pretty cool to win. I mean, it wasn't really any catch to it, you know, just a nice, simple $1,000 prize, which is really cool. And the promos only had to be anywhere between like 10 to 30 seconds. So I think it was a cool opportunity for people to actually win something cool and also use the tracks and see how well they work with their station.
Now, when you're actually, now we'll kind of get a little more technical. When you're actually and I should preface this, I had a really long, almost essay of a question sent in to me, but it had a lot of good points in it, some stuff I wanted to talk about. So I'm going to go through that, some of the stuff that listeners of the podcast submitted for you. But when you're actually producing stuff, it might not be easy enough to just break down like this, but do you kind of get something in your head, like, you know, you can sort of visualize the sound in your head and then go make that? Or does stuff just sort of come out organically and you just say, oh, look what I just made. All right, it's good. You know, how does that process work?
Oh, man, it's all over the place. Mostly it's experimenting. my approach is, okay, what kind of weird, trippy sounds are going to really twist my ear in a different way and kind of make me think, whoa, that was interesting, you know? So, man, it's mostly experimenting. I mean, I'll take instruments, whether it's a drum machine or a keyboard or a guitar, and I'll run them through, you know, different multiple effects processors or pedals all at once, and you know, just kind of start messing around, turning knobs, twisting knobs in real time, and just kind of let the, you know, let Pro Tools run, and hope some really cool weird stuff happens and capture some, you know, nice accidents happening.
All ready to do this?
Yeah, man, I'm ready.
Live on your radio.
The Sprite Street Mix.
Cool grooves, refreshing vibes. Welcome to the liquid world.
The Sprite Street Mix.
The Sprite Street Mix.
B-ball, hip-hop, dance, spoken word. Express yourself. The Sprite Street Mix.
Back-to-back songs. Non-stop music. Cool FM Internet Radio.
One hit at a time. On the one.
Radio One. 97.1. It's just the one.
The one. You get it locked on Hot FM 98.3.
System overload. It's time to let our turntables cool down for a brief moment. Your total refreshment experience will resume shortly.
This is your Coca-Cola Open Happiness Mix Show.
The producers.